Hello, everyone. My name is Tim Mikelashvili. Welcome to the All Out Coach podcast. I'm your host, also CEO and co-founder of Amedev Pharma, a performance analytics agency in life sciences that uses a sports and data science formula to help medical affairs organizations directly quantify their business impact on the healthcare community and their organizations. Today, I have with me Dr. Rashad Masood, a globally recognized healthcare leader, an expert in quality of healthcare. He was introduced to me by a government official from the Republic of Georgia, where I was born. And thinking about this conversation today, I've really come full circle by getting to know him, because one of my first projects that I was most proud of in the pharmaceutical industry was analyzing thousands of medication errors based on Institute of Safe Medication Practices and healthcare quality initiatives that I was following and I was moved by early on. Dr. Rashad Masood has traveled to over 104 countries. He has supervised various different healthcare programs, scaled them, improved healthcare in many different countries, led to better outcomes, efficiency, and sustainability. He's visiting faculty of the Harvard Chan School of Public Health, inaugural member of the Quality and Safety Academy of the International Society for Quality, ISQUA, advisory board member, the World Health Organization's Global Report on Quality and Safety. He's also a member of the board of directors of the Harvard Alumni Association. And his, some of his previous roles have included senior vice president and chief program officer at AmeriCares, overseeing the organization's health programs worldwide for people affected by poverty or disaster, among others. Chief Medical and Quality Officer and Senior Vice President of the Quality and Performance Institute at University Research Company, also. He's fluent in English, Arabic, and Russian, and we are going to hear about how he sees all of us taking our personal health and connecting it to the quality of healthcare on a global scale. Rashad, what a pleasure it is to speak to you today and to share some of your ideas.
Tim, the pleasure and honor are mine. Thank you so much for inviting me. And I have enjoyed all of our interactions. And I look forward also to the upcoming conference with Amedev.
Sure. Rashad, I want to start by talking about what really drove you to dedicate your career to improve the quality of healthcare on a global scale, and how did it all start?
Thank you. That's a great question. And the very simple answer that I have is that it all started by coincidence. I grew up in a family where my father was a physician. All my life, that's what I wanted to be, and that's what I became. And I started to practice medicine. It was what my dream. It was what I wanted to do, and I was doing it. And then the Intifada broke out in Palestine, my home country. And that's when I started to understand that as a practicing physician, my hands are really tied up. There was very little in terms of systemic efforts to be able to cope with the nature of what was going on. And that made me to think about, well, how does one create a health system? And one thing led to the other. And I ended up coming to the US, coming to the Harvard Chan School of Public Health to study health systems, where I actually met my mentor, took his class. His name was Don Berwick. And he was the person who had introduced improvement here in the US, or at the time he was still introducing it. These were the early days. And I thought this was probably the best thing I've studied. One thing led to the other. I'm back at home and I started to use these methods. I was working for the United Nations Relief and Works Agency at the time. I was responsible for two health centers where I was the practicing physician, but also in charge of those health centers. And I started to use them. And it was an unbelievable journey. Things that I thought were very difficult to, or everybody thought were very difficult to solve, were quite solvable using these systematic approaches to understanding work as processes and systems and reorganizing them in ways that allow us to see better results and get better results. So that's how it all started. Mm-hmm. It was really not a well thought through plan as much as I realized I have a need. I went to fulfill that need and I came across improvement methods and I started that way. That's that's how it started.
Well, I have a personal interest in quality of healthcare, and I imagine some of our listeners would be curious to know from a global expert in the field how you define quality of healthcare. So could you provide an expert definition?
Sure. I would love to do that. But before I actually sort of talk about how I think about it, let me just sort of use the standard definition, which was developed by what's now the National Academies of Science, Medicine, and Engineering and Medicine. Back then, it was the Institute of Medicine. And the definition is this, that it's the degree to which health services for individuals or populations increase the likelihood of desired health outcomes and are consistent with current professional knowledge, which, you know, is a big statement. It, basically, what it says is, to the extent that we can ensure that the best medicine, the best knowledge, the best evidence that we have is delivered to every patient every time it's needed, we're going to get those better quality results. Now, of course, that's one way to look at it, which is from the health outcomes point of view. But then there are other aspects to this. And some of them are about also being efficient about delivering the care, but also making sure that we live up to our, you know, do no harm statement, which is making sure it's safe. But also all of this care we provide because somebody needs it, a patient needs it. So to the extent that we meet the needs and expectations of our patients, our care is going to be better. Of course, the other thing here is being equitable. So it's not just for some people, it's for everybody alike, and so on. So to me, quality care is where the patient receives the care, and it's the degree to which we can meet the patient's needs in the most effective way possible, ensuring that our patients are happy with what they are getting.
And over the years, because of the advances in medicine, in research, their expectations are probably higher, right? And the questions that they're asking are becoming a little bit more complex to providers. So they're probably expecting higher quality of care, you know, as we advance in technology, in our you know, theories in medicine and applications and in treatments as well, I imagine, and in you know, in there, the quality probably is not only dependent on the patient outcomes themselves, but it's also a function of how the healthcare system is organized around them, which you have orchestrated throughout your career, I think. And what is your personal theory on quality improvement then? And what are some of the highlights from your vast experience?
So, you know, Tim, that's a great question. first of all, quality of care can be improved in many different ways. So, for example, any advance in our knowledge, in our technology, in the treatment that we have, in the diagnostic that we have, will lead to improvements. A lot of the research that happens leads to improvements. Sometimes by trial and error, we figure out things and we understand things and we learn how to make things happen. Those are not the arenas that I delve into. I delve into an arena where there is a theory of improvement, which actually originates outside of healthcare. And that theory basically says, if I were to sort of sum it up in one sentence, it's every system is perfectly designed to achieve exactly the results it achieves. In other words, what we're saying is this, that if we continue to do what we're doing, we will continue to get the results we're getting. Now, if we want different results, it follows that we would need to do something different. At the heart of improvement as we know it today is the notion of change. So improvement equals change. However, not every change is necessarily an improvement. Some changes may not yield improvement or may even make things worse. And so for us to know if we have improved, that means we need to know the data before. We need to have the data as we are introducing a change or different changes. And we need the data after to be able to compare. But that's really what is at the heart of improvement and the theory of quality improvement that we have today. And it's what I work on. So what I try to do in my everyday work is take what's known from an evidence point of view, from the scientific point of view, to be efficacious. Those are the diagnostics and the treatments that we have, the good medicine that we have. And organize care delivery in ways that allow that to happen effectively, reliably for every patient, every time it is needed, and thereby yield the best possible result given the state of the art that we have.
Yeah, so healthcare is certainly one of the popular topics that I talk about with experts such as yourself, and it affects all of us. Which we've now learned in particular over the last 2 or 3 years. Now, you know, to bring this topic to the urgency that it merits for our listeners, maybe I thought it would be helpful for you to share some of your experiences having worked with so many various global healthcare systems, traveled in over 100 countries. What are some of those lessons that you have learned throughout those experiences?
So I think the key lesson that comes out is that we can improve care, which is sort of only so many years ago, a couple of decades ago, when I was first in this field, this was a question. Can we actually improve outcomes of care? And the answer is now, yes, we can. We're able to do that to the extent that the state of the art allows us to. And invariably, what happens is that not every patient gets all the care that they need. So ensuring that it's the right care and ensuring that care delivery is organized in ways that allow that to happen every time it's needed for every patient that needs it is what makes the difference. So that is ground that's covered today. That's the main lesson that we come out of. Mm-hmm. In doing that, I think there's a big lesson, which is to the extent that different people who are trying to accomplish the same thing can get together and share their experiences as they're improving it, we will get better results, we will get them faster, they will energize each other. And so this whole notion of collaboration and shared learning has really become a key lesson that we have learned over time. There are a couple of areas where I think we need to do more work. One of them is when it comes to creating systems capable of continually improving. I think we've come a long way, but we're not quite there. And this is probably one of the lessons I would take forward, going forward. And the other one is really getting more people engaged in quality of care, more people who are on the receiving end, patients, their families, in such a way that we increase the demand from civil society in such a way that there is a pull factor for better quality of care.
I see. So the patients and their involvement, their active involvement in their own care and decision making as well, and also education and awareness of the importance of the quality of healthcare, right? As they change physicians, as they change their health plans, jobs, as they go from one health system to another, right? And as they learn about clinical trials that they may be also eligible for. Rashad, I want to ask you to take a step back a little bit and share maybe some of the specific highlights in some of the countries and or for some disease conditions that I know you've published a lot. Can you take us through just that process of that quality improvement in an area that you were in physically or that you maybe supervised remotely from sure. wherever it was you sure. are in the United States?
We've had so many of these, and it's been so many countries with multiple different activities in each country. There's a general theme around them, which is the country usually comes to us with like a specific problem that they want to solve, or mm-hmm. the health system has a specific problem. That problem mm-hmm. could be anything like, well, we have a lot of hospital-acquired infections in our mm-hmm. hospital, or we have a lot of patients who are lost to treatment, or we have a lot of neonates or mothers dying during delivery, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We have a lot of patients whose hypertension is not controlled. So that's the type of pull that comes in. And as a rule, what we would do is we would start somewhere, but over the years, we've learned that we don't just start somewhere. We start somewhere with a view to the full scale that this system would need to go to, because the starting point then becomes very important. The choice of where and what type of facilities, etc., become really, really critical for that. And we would try to figure it out right there in those handful of places where we're trying to start. And we would engage with the people providing the care, with the patients, and we would talk about what they're doing, how they're doing it. We would have them measure their data and then introduce changes that are consistent with the best evidence that we have and the best way to organize care delivery in their, usually in their opinion, actually, and in the patients, from the patient's point of view, and see if those changes actually yield the result. And if you look at my LinkedIn or at my Twitter accounts, you will see that, you know, I've published result after result of different types of improvements, from reducing mortality to reducing the burden of illness and getting patients on treatment, et cetera, et cetera. So many different results that are there. And then one of the important things about this is once we figure it out there is to take it to the full scale that it needs to go to. And in the process of doing all of this, ensuring that there is a lot of capability being built in to the system, not only to make this improvement, but to also be able to make other improvements going forward, and then work with the leadership on setting up a system that's capable of continually improving on an ongoing basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I know in India, for example, you had a healthcare a hypertension program, right? Where you identified some of the activities and the outcomes. You divided all of your initiatives into their individual parts, and then you also modified your new initiatives accordingly throughout that yes. intervention. So you're very agile in your initiatives that you recommended, and ultimately yeah. you demonstrated an improvement in a large country, you know, for a very mainstream condition, hypertension, even after COVID, right?
Yes. So actually, Tim, this was taking place during COVID, and it actually was less than 2 years in total, just over a year of activity. The mm-hmm. beauty of that was we had a strategy at the time that not only do we want to improve the outcomes of care, but we also want to address any inequities in the care that we're delivering. And so right at the beginning, we defined hypertension control as our key indicator. And we looked at these were 8 mobile health centers serving the slum areas in Mumbai, so very impoverished areas. And what we had was, about a 60% blood pressure control amongst the 60 some thousand patients who had hypertension and were being treated there. And for those patients, the overall improvement in blood pressure control went from the 60 to about 90 something percent, which is a huge improvement. And we stratified for different potential causes of inequity. And there was one cause that came out, and this was not peculiar for this particular project. We had seen it before on many others, which was a gender inequity. Male patients not doing as well as females. And the inequity was over 10%, about 11-something percent of difference in blood pressure control between females and males. And over the period of the project, this was continually improved through both the improvement and the inequity were being addressed through a series of iterative changes that were being introduced. And it went down to about 2% gender inequity towards the end. So you can get some pretty significant results doing this type of work.
I see.
And this is only one example among many others.
Yeah. So recently, I was asked to speak about healthcare and, you know, its role in innovation and in an economy at a global conference. And I had caught up with you as an expert, and I had asked you to enlighten me a little bit and provide me some context. And I want to also kind of talk about some of the latest trends in healthcare. We know that healthcare spending, as it's often referred, has tripled in the United States. Life expectancy is at its lowest in two decades, you know, over the same span of time. However, it's often an investment. It requires an investment in innovation, healthcare, right? So when is it a cost or utilization, and when is it an investment? How do you make sense of some of these latest trends? And can you help us with just explain, you know, what you're following and what do they mean? What are these trends in healthcare spending and their impact on innovation ultimately in healthcare mean?
It's a very complex question. Yeah. I think there's two sort of sides. There's two ways to think about this. The first one is the whole notion of innovation. And yeah, rightly so, innovation can be about a lot of new discovery. It can be about new technologies, some of which can be quite simple, but they're still technology solutions. But then there's innovation in the delivery side of the equation, which is sort of where I focus my attention. How do we ensure that what's known to work happens effectively, reliably for every patient every time it's needed? And I think mm-hmm. that when we look at innovation, we need to look at both sides. One alone doesn't work. So if we just have innovation on the discovery side and it doesn't reach the patients, what good is that? Or doesn't reach all the patients or everybody who needs them, what good is that? On the other hand, if all we have is the innovation in the delivery side and we're not innovating on the discovery side, again, we're falling short. So to me, there's two sides to innovation and both of them need to be addressed. Now, having said that, there's another aspect, which is cost of care. And unfortunately, a lot of the US is leading the world in terms of cost of care, but it's not leading the world in terms of outcomes of care. A lot of that has to do with the notion of healthcare not being a right, healthcare not being something that it's left to the private or the market to a large extent, and that's leading a lot of what we are seeing. The rest of the world is not there. A lot of other countries that are basically spending half or less than half of what the US is spending are getting much better results. And it begs the question, why are they doing that? And how are they able to do that? And they're doing that much more equitably as well. So I think there's a lot that needs to be reflected on here and say, what are good ways to set up good health systems that serve the people and reduce the cost, and which ones are not as good. So, of course, the other thing is that the U.S. really leads the world in rescue medicine. If you're going to have a heart attack, the US is the place to have it. You've got all the technology, all the everything is so ready for it, but it doesn't really lead the world when it comes to preventing it from happening and health promotion and preventive activities. That's not where we excel, whereas other places in the world are far ahead of us. Now, of course, I'm saying this in general because there are islands of excellence everywhere.
And, sure.
You know, we do have some systems that are really good at doing things, but I wish it were everywhere, not just islands of excellence.
I see. Yeah. So I think you brought out an important distinction between preventive care being a potential investment where you can link healthcare delivery to investment and rescue care being a source of the spending and the utilization, which more of us are familiar with in healthcare, in the context of healthcare. Right. And probably the statistics, which you're probably referring to and which we spoke about, that in the United States, healthcare spending contributes to about 1/5 of the entire GDP. And when I asked you about how does that relate to the rest of the world, I believe you mentioned that that was twice as much of a relationship of the proportion in Europe, for example, or anywhere else, where the healthcare utilization is only about 10%, not 20% of their respective countries' GDP. So it's about really spending and investing more efficiently in healthcare systems, which is a complex question, but nevertheless a gap that you've outlined here. Now, I mentioned to you that I've come full circle by speaking to you as a healthcare quality expert, somebody who takes safety of medications and improving quality to their heart. And that's how I was starting out in my career in the industry, listening to the president and of IHI, right, or ISMP, Institution of Safe Medication Practices, or under the first Institute of Medicine report on medication errors and their sequela. So I was absolutely enthusiastic about a topic that was not as exciting for many others. I want to ask you about how we in the pharma and biotech industry as a whole can play a more proactive role in transforming that healthcare from a cost into an investment. Right? What can the industry stakeholders learn from some of your experiences, Rashad?
Well, that's a great question, and I will try to put some thought into this. So for me, first of all, I think curative medicine is critical. You know, if somebody's sick, we need to treat them. So beyond doubt, and a lot of effort is there, but I also see a lot of prevention efforts going on, and that's also very important. And then the other thing is trying to promote health, which is a non-pharmaceutical approach to living a healthier life. I think we need to look at not just how the pharma industry can help convert it from a cost into an investment by prevention, but also how other industries need to also start thinking of, the food industry and how we can look at what's happening with climate change and how we're looking at the environment that, there are some places where it's actually very difficult to walk outside. Things like walking is a very important part of, health promotion. Yeah. So when we start to look at the whole built environment that we are in and the surroundings that people have, they play a major role as well. So I think it's not just one or the other industry. It's the whole of society and how they come together to promote health, prevent illness. And it's, some of it is primary prevention, but other, that is preventing something from happening in the first place. But then, if one has high levels of cholesterol, being on the right secondary prevention, on the right treatment that prevents that cholesterol from affecting to the extent possible, their heart condition, etc. Those are all important factors that we need to put together. So it's a whole society approach to living a healthy life.
Yeah, and when I think about a patient who has to wait for years until a particular medication is approved, is also approved in their town or in their country, or that particular clinical trial is now, you know, available for them to enroll in, I think that's where I'm thinking that the pharma industry and the healthcare industry are now starting to, you know, contribute to preventing many, you know, medications, screening potentially as well. And what you mentioned earlier about the educational part, what, you know, about the need, the gap in patients themselves being equipped with information and also receive that information from the manufacturers, because sometimes they look to the new manufacturers of these products that they are approved as a first source, but the pharma industry is not able to provide them this information because of regulations, and maybe we can make some headway in that department in providing the actual information that patients need in order to be more educated in their decisions, to your points earlier. So I know that this has been a preview, this discussion here, to a more detailed panel, an expert panel where Dr. Rashad Masood will be speaking at the 2023 Medical Affairs Innovation Olympics, September 18th. And I know that that's one of your upcoming projects, but I want to ask you what your next project or milestone is in which you're stretching yourself and lifting others, as we say at All Out Coach, our slogan. Yes, can you provide a preview?
Sure. Well, of course, I mentioned the two sort of areas where I would like to dig deeper and create sort of more knowledge and understanding, which are how to make improvement an integral part of a system on an ongoing basis, and how to engage civil society in increasing demand for quality of care. But on a personal level, this year has been a huge learning for me, because this is, you know, I developed the course that I taught at Harvard Chan, and I taught that course. And of course, teaching it to very talented students who are at school is very different than teaching it to healthcare professionals in health facilities where they have their improvements or their work, which is healthcare delivery, and they can make improvements to it. So I had to figure out, how does a student apply these methods and techniques while they're a student at school? And so I proposed at the time, I said, well, everybody choose something that's significant to them, and let's work with that. Well, to my surprise, every one of the students took on a personal improvement project, personal health improvement project. Mm-hmm. So some talked about, you know, improving their sleep, others about improving their diet, others about, you know, drinking the right amounts of water, etc. And every one of them was able to make improvements, making iterative changes that led them to get the results that they want. And I realized that there's actually a nugget here, which is personal improvement. And that was a huge learning for me. And it's something that I would like to take to the next level and see how I can work with other students to make sure that we are actually working on not just improving healthcare for others, but improving our own health as we go forward. So it's been a fantastic learning experience for me, and one that I think I'm about to stretch myself in.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for that example, and congratulations. And I wish you lots of luck with that initiative. And you heard it from Dr. Rashad Masood. Those of you who are interested in continuing this conversation, make sure to contact him at rashadmasood@gmail.com. Rashad Masood with two S's, MASSOUD@gmail.com. Those of you who are listening to this episode, it's also available on the All Out Coach YouTube channel as a video. And you're going to hear much more from Dr. Rashad Masood next month and later on this year. So Rashad, it's been a pleasure and a huge honor to speak to you again and to spread some of your ideas in making healthcare personal and also making a new mark in global healthcare as well.
Tim, the honor and pleasure are mine. Thank you so much. This has been just a wonderful interview, and I'm looking forward very much to the upcoming conference meeting colleagues there as well. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Rashad.